The gospel teaches that Jesus is the only way to God.
Many ways, many paths to what you call God.
I don't believe in your version of God.
Whatever we once were, we are no longer a Christian nation.
The Two Crusades Radio Program.
We're all gonna ride.
Welcome to the Trinity Crusades Radio Program. I'm Braxton Hunter. Thank you for listening. Today we're going to be talking about some stories, and we're going to look in detail at some stories that I believe may qualify as actual miracles. I have annoyed my family, my wife, my friends at times when I have said about a certain thing, well, I don't know if we can call that particular thing miraculous because it can easily be explained in other ways. But we're going to talk today about some things that I think probably do qualify as actual miracles that we've seen, that have been reported on, that you can go and look at the evidence for yourself, that are happening right now. You know, so often we get to thinking that miracles happen only in the Bible. You know, one of the biggest criticisms that come from atheists against miracle claims is, well, these things seem to happen all the time in the Bible, but they don't happen anymore. If the Bible was true, we should expect that we would still see miracles today. And I want to say that you're absolutely right. We should expect to see that. And in fact, I believe that we have seen this and do see this. All you've got to do is take a look. Now, we are going to look at some stories, some specific stories of miracles, okay? So don't tune away. Don't click off the podcast with what I'm about to say, but I need to set this up a little bit. What is a miracle? Now, you're going to find 1,000 different definitions for what a miracle is. And there may be some things that are miracles that we can't really conclude are miracles because they can be pretty well easily explained in other ways. But that doesn't mean that God didn't have some design in that or step in. But I'm using a definition of miracles that is something like this. We can conclude that we have a miracle on our hands when when the chances are better that this was the result of some design at the hand of God or something supernatural, then the chances are that this can be explained naturalistically. Okay? So it's almost like when there is something that overrides the natural and we have a supernatural explanation is the best explanation. I think a good example of that is the resurrection of Jesus. I think the best explanation for the data that surrounds the events of Jesus' death and later appearing is that he was resurrected from the dead by God. I think that's the best explanation. I mean, when you look at the evidence and you see that here was a guy who claimed to be God, he went around preaching that he was God, that he was going to set up a kingdom on earth, that he was the divine Son of God, you have an empty tomb and the powers that be began to start saying, well, we're going to explain this away, that the disciples stole the body. When you have Jesus appearing later to other people after his death, bodily, in the flesh. And by the way, all of these things I'm mentioning are things that biblical scholars today who are not Christians, Christians and non-Christians across the board, agree are likely, it's likely that these things are true historically. That is to say that there really was an empty tomb, that people really did believe that they saw Jesus bodily after his death, that people were willing to die for their belief in the resurrection and things like that. And so I think the best explanation for that sort of thing is that it was a miracle, that God raised Jesus from the dead. But before we go any further, we need to take a look at criticisms of miracles. One criticism of a miracle is that that put forth by David Hume. David Hume wrote on miracles and said that and criticized the miraculous by saying that you can't ever conclude that anything was a miracle because a miracle, by definition, is the least likely thing to have occurred. And so if a miracle, he's not saying that a miracle is impossible. He wants to be careful about that. I'm not saying that a miracle is impossible, he says, but a miracle is, by definition, you have to admit, the least likely thing to have occurred because it is supernatural. And so we can never conclude that a miracle is what happened because there's always, no matter how outlandish, a naturalistic explanation that fits better than a miracle. Okay? But the problem with that is that if you take that explanation, then you can never, if the truth is that a miracle occurred, David Hume says that miracles may happen, we just can't ever conclude that a miracle has happened. If that's true, then we may never get to the root of a particular thing that happened. We may never get to the actual explanation because that explanation will be miraculous. And so we could never conclude that. So if you take David Hume's interpretation of this sort of thing, there are certain things we'll just never know because they happen to be a miracle and we can't conclude the miraculous no matter how much we want to, no matter how much evidence is mounted up, because a miracle is by definition the least likely thing to have occurred. So the problem number one is there's certain things you just never can get to the truth. You have to deny the truth because it may have been miraculous. And then the second thing about this is, the second problem with this is that it's actually not true that a miracle is the least likely thing to have occurred. The only way you get that is if you deny belief in God. But if you believe in God, then a miracle is not the least likely thing to have occurred. In fact, we would expect that God might step in human history and act in certain ways at certain times. We might actually think that in the case, say, of Jesus, for example, that it's probable that if we have evidence that this man died and then later appeared to others bodily, we have good reason to believe that, yeah, God raised Jesus from the dead. So there's a couple of problems with Hume's famous critique of miracles here, and there's other things that we could say about this. But we often have this criticism from atheists and unbelievers that, well, if it were the case that the Bible were true, miracles are happening all the time in the Bible. Shouldn't they still be happening now? I mean, if miracles happened as frequently as we see them happening in the Bible, and the Bible is true, then we should expect that we would see miracles happening all the time right now. And I would agree with them. Yeah, that's right. We should expect that we would see miracles today. But I don't agree with the idea that we don't see miracles. In fact, I think we do see miracles all the time. Craig Keener has just released a book a year or two ago on miracles that is something like 1,000 pages, maybe more than that, long. And it's all about modern-day miracles that still take place all the time. And everything from people being healed at the brink of death to people being raised back to life from death. And Keener is not some mystic or some sort of person that we might expect would say this sort of thing that's always talking about visions and things like that. Keener is an academic. A well-studied academic who knows how to do research, and he's gone to places and talked with people and interviewed them and brought data and evidence and given citations, and we have good evidence here that what we see happening is an actual miracle. And so I think that there are good reasons to believe that miracles still do happen today, and I think that that's just a little more evidence for the truth of the Christian worldview. So let's talk a little bit about some of these miracles. What do we see today that counts as miraculous? Well, there are all kinds of things that happen in the midst of the Boston bombing that I think might count, but let's bring it a little more up to date and look at the tornado that just ravaged Oklahoma just here recently. There was a somewhat miraculous story there, and I'm sure as time goes on we'll hear more stories that can't be explained except in a miraculous way. But there's a story that you may have heard something about in the news about a miraculous baby who a woman was giving birth. She was in labor at the time of a tornado. And you can imagine the horrible, dramatic experience that goes on when any child is born, when a woman is going through labor. You know, I often say I admire women. I thank God for women. But I am glad, if for no other reason than this, that I don't have to go through the kinds of things that they sometimes have to go through. This woman is giving birth at the moment that the tornado is ravaging the town. In fact, she looked on her phone and saw that it was coming down the very street that the hospital was on. And so she was ushered into a room where hopefully she would be safe from this tornado with some other people that were trying to get safety. And the wall was literally ripped off of the room that she was in. She looked over and saw the buildings that were across the street. In fact, I think that she was afraid at one time that some of the people had been ripped out of the room that she was in. Yet she successfully delivered this healthy baby and was spared when everything around her was ravaged and destroyed. Now, people are calling this a miracle birth. Now, I realize that in this case, maybe you can explain it away. Maybe you can say, well, you know, she was just one of the lucky ones. You know, she was lucky to have survived this, and that her child survived this and was healthy and all of that. Well, okay, maybe in a case like that you can. But let's think about the cases of babies that have survived horrible tornadoes over the past few years. One of the ones that was very close to my heart happened at Union University, or near Union University, in West Tennessee. Now, at the time, I was living in Bellevue, just outside of Nashville, on the west side of Nashville. And after this tornado just utterly destroyed parts of Union University and the surrounding areas, it actually traveled along Interstate 40 and went over the condominium complex where I was living at the time. And I remember very clearly my wife and I huddled in our closet so that we wouldn't be injured by this tornado. And fortunately, by the time that it got to where we were, there was some damage, but it was pretty well, it had pretty well siphoned off a little bit and was okay, but destroyed the area where Union University was. And there was an amazing story. There were many amazing stories. I think a book's been written on this. But there was one amazing story about a child. I want to read to you a news report about this. This story that was reported by Fox News says, "The muddy field was littered with debris after a wave of violent storms, living room couches, strollers, children's toys. So when two rescuers came upon a baby, they thought it was a doll. Then he moved. Quote, we grabbed hold of his neck to take a pulse, and he took a breath of air and started crying, said David Harmon, a firefighter from a nearby county who was combing the field for tornado victims. The boy was found at least 100 yards away from where his family's house had been, possibly lifted by the storm's fierce winds, according to witnesses at the scene on Thursday. There was no trace of exactly where the house stood. His mother, who did not survive, was found in the same field. In a region devastated by tornadoes that killed at least 57 people as they swept through five states, the infant was a sign of hope. The 11-month-old baby, named Kyson, was surrounded by flattened homed bricks blown from a blown-apart post office and snapped trees, a devastating scene similar to so many communities across the South. The baby's mother, 24-year-old Carrie Stowell, was one of six people killed in the small community, said Summer County Sheriff Bob Barker. Now, think about this story here. We have a child who somehow was ripped out of its home, and then the home was completely destroyed, maybe destroyed as the child was ripped out of the home by the fierce winds. There was no sign that that house was even left standing. The child was thrown 100 yards away into a field, and all around this field were bricks from a post office that was destroyed and blown apart. Trees were snapped and broken apart all around the place. And this child was fine. This child was taken and taken to a hospital and looked after and is perfectly fine today. Now, what's the best explanation of that? Well, people have tried to explain away this story because obviously there were a lot of miracle claims about this baby. But people say, well, you know, the baby is perfect for this sort of thing because the fatty tissue serves as a great cushion and the malleable bones can bend and not break. And I mean, I have to say, after all, having two daughters myself, you can drop children from heights that you or I proportionately would be severely injured and they're fine. But when we're talking about 100 yards away or whatever it was in a field after the house has been destroyed and bricks are everywhere and people are dead all around this area, and this child is perfectly fine and found a reasonably long time after the event, I mean, I think we're just coming to a point where, yeah, you can explain this naturalistically, but is that the best explanation? Is that the explanation that has the best chance of being true? Well, if there's no God, then I guess so. But if you believe in God, I think the best explanation of this is a miracle. And this is not the only story we have of a child surviving in circumstances like these. We have other stories. Now I live in Indiana. There's a story in Indiana from several years ago. A toddler in New Pekin, Indiana, who was found lying alone in a field after a storm. At first, no one knew who she was or how she'd ended up there, but after being taken to a nearby hospital, she was eventually identified as Angel Babcock, and it was determined that the rest of her family had been killed when a funnel cloud obliterated her home. A neighbor, Jason Miller, saw her moments before the tornado hit inside her family's home. mobile home with her father, Joseph Babcock, 21, her mother, Mariah Bro, 20. They had gathered Angel, who had been reported to be either 14 or 20 months old, and their other two children, Jaden, age 2, and Kendall, who was only 2 months old, and were huddled holding hands and praying in the hallway as the storm approached. Miller had been trying to bring them back to his large mobile home, which would have been safer, but before they could go, the funnel cloud arrived. It picked up Miller and threw him to the ground, leaving him with several broken bones. The Babcocks, sadly, were not so lucky. The tornado ripped right through their house. Joseph's body was found across the road from the house. Mariah was found under a tree. Jaden was buried under the rubble. And here's the most terrible detail. Baby Kendall was found upside down, still in her car seat. Somehow, though, Angel, who must have been picked up by the funnel cloud, landed alone in a nearby field and survived, though she was seriously injured. After she was found, she was first taken to a local hospital and then flown to a large hospital in Louisville, Kentucky, where she was on life support until today. So there's another story of a child ripped from a home, thrown into a field some distance away, and somehow survived. That's not the only story. In October 2007, a Michigan family panicked after they couldn't find their one-year-old after a tornado tore down part of their home. The boy was found 40 feet outside the house, under the crib mattress, and uninjured. And during a tornado outbreak that killed 21 in North Carolina, a 3-month-old Aiden in Dunn, North Carolina, was ripped by tornado winds from his cousin's arms and later found lodged under debris, injured, but ultimately okay. I thought he was lost, the cousin Jonathan Robinson said later. In one of the most well-known cases from May 3, 1999, a young mom, Amy Crago, searched frantically for her baby, Aaliyah, for hours after one of a series of tornadoes to hit Oklahoma destroyed her house. In what Ms. Crago described as a miracle, a rescue worker approached and asked, "Are you the one missing a 10-month-old baby?" Aaliyah had been found, largely unharmed, laying face down in a mud pool 100 feet from the home. She became known to the joyous rescuers as the Mud Baby. Now 13, Aaliyah recently offered a survivor's healthy assessment of the power of tornadoes and their clashes with the human spirit. "I think tornadoes are cool," she told Oklahoma News Station last week. "I like how they work and how they can destroy so much, but they're just wind going around in a circle." So here are several stories, and the stories go on and on. We could spend a whole show talking about these amazing stories of children ripped from their homes. And in the first story I told you, amazingly, the house was completely destroyed. Everyone else is killed. The buildings around there are completely destroyed, and they're found in a field, ultimately okay, or at least able to survive. Now, what's the best explanation of this? Well, I would admit that if it was just one story, maybe we'd come up with a naturalistic explanation. Although, I think these are amazing enough that I still don't think maybe those would be the most likely. I think the miraculous is the most likely. But when you have just story after story after story after story of babies and toddlers that survive these sorts of things, how can you maintain that there wasn't something going on here that was an overriding force that allowed this sort of thing to happen? And I think that's the best explanation. So I think there's some hope that comes out of some of these stories. Now, if you're still not convinced, let's leave the stories of tornadoes for just a second and look at miracles in general. There's a famous story that Snopes.com is a website that tries to take urban legends and things like that and poke and prod at them and look at the evidence and try to find out if they're true or not. And Snopes.com determined that this story was true. And here's the claim. When a Nebraska church exploded in 1950, no one was injured because every member of the choir was late arriving for practice that evening. And they determined that this was true. Now, I'm going to read the story to you. I want you to really listen. "As unbelievable as this story is, it did happen. Despite the explosions taking place 5 minutes after choir practice was scheduled to begin, not one of the 15 people who should have been present had yet arrived when the building collapsed. They were all late. Choir practice at the Westside Baptist Church in Beatrice, Nebraska, always began at 7:20 on Wednesday evening. At 7:25 on Wednesday, March 1st, 1950, an explosion demolished the church. The blast forced a nearby radio station off the air and shattered windows in surrounding homes. But every one of the choir's 15 members escaped injury. Saved by a fortuitous coincidence, all were late for practice that night. Considering the sanctified site of the explosion, it was not surprising that some attributed the near miss to divine intervention. They supposed rightly that the odds of a unanimous tardiness were slim indeed, especially when the reasons were examined. Car trouble delayed two women. The minister and his family and daughter were delayed by a dress that needed ironing at the last minute. Others were late because they paused to complete homework, finish a letter, or hear the end of a favorite radio show. One awoke late from a nap. Some could think of no special reason. They were just late. It is impossible to calculate precise odds for all these events occurring at once, but past performance indicated that each person would be late for practice one time in four, producing a 1 in a million chance that the entire choir would be late that night. As to what those reasons were, whether they were of the garden variety or divine intervention, judge for yourself. It happened on the evening of March 1st in the town of Beatrice, Nebraska. In the afternoon, the Reverend Walter Kemple had gone to the Westside Baptist Church to get things ready for choir practice. He lit the furnace. Most of the singers were in the habit of arriving around 7:15, and it was chilly in the church, and went home to dinner. But at 7:10, when it was time for him to go back to the church with his wife and daughter, Marilyn Ruth, it turned out that Marilyn Ruth's dress was soiled. They waited while Miss Kemple ironed another, and thus were still at home when it happened. LaDonna Vandergrift, a high school sophomore, was having trouble with a geometry problem. She knew practice began promptly and always came early, but she stayed to finish the problem. Royanna Estes was ready, but the car would not start. So she and her sister called LaDonna Vandergrift and asked her to pick them up. But LaDonna was the girl with the geometry problem, and the Estes sisters had to wait. Sadie Estes' story was the same as Royanna's. All day they had been having trouble with the car. It just refused to start. Mrs. Leonard Schuster would ordinarily have arrived at 7:20 with her small daughter Susan, but on that particular evening, Mrs. Schuster had to go to her mother's house to help her get ready for a missionary meeting. Herbert Kipf, lathe operator, would have been ahead of time but had put off an important letter. "I can't think why," he said. He lingered over it and was late. It was a cold evening. Stenographer Joyce Black, feeling just plain lazy, stayed in her warm house until the last possible moment. She was almost ready to leave when it happened. Because his wife was away, machinist Harvey All was taking care of his two boys. He was going to take them to practice with him, but somehow he got wound up talking. When he looked at his watch, he saw he was already late. Marilyn Paul, the pianist, had planned to arrive half an hour early. However, she fell asleep after dinner, and when her mother awakened her, it was 7:15, she had time only to tidy up and start out. So the stories go on and on like this. And ultimately, this church was destroyed by an explosion, and no one was there. And the only reason no one was there was because for a variety of strange reasons, on this particular night, they all happened to be late. Despite the jokes we want to make about people being late to church, the fact is most of these people were always on time or a little bit early, and they were late 1 out of 4 times on average. So the chances that they would all be late are 1 in a million. Now, what's the best explanation of this? I mean, can you really look at this data and say, well, it's just coincidence? I mean, you can do that, but listen, the chances are so astronomical that the best explanation is this was a miracle. I mean, I don't see why this is so crazy. So when people ask the question, are miracles still common today? I think they are. I think they're common, and so I think that it's reasonable to believe the Bible when it talks about miracles. I mean, there are stories of miracles today of people being risen from the dead, people being saved from things like this. Some of these stories don't ever get reported on because the news doesn't like to report on things like this very often, but I was outside of Joplin, Missouri, just earlier this year, preaching at a church, and I heard some amazing stories about what happened in Joplin, Missouri when it was destroyed in 2011. I heard a story about a woman who was at a Lowe's and was when this thing happened and crouched with her two daughters, put her arms around them, and she was sitting right next to a couple of forklifts. And after the whole thing was over, or in the midst of it, she said she felt an urge to open her eyes. And she opened her eyes and she said, "I saw what looked like a cloud of hands around me protecting me and things flying off of this cloud of hands." She said, "I after the whole thing was done, I looked around me and the forklifts that I had just been leaning against were completely gone, taken away by the devastation. Everything around me was destroyed, but I was fine. And I had this vision of these hands that were protecting me." And these are people that don't normally talk like this. I mean, they don't talk about visions and mystical experiences and these sorts of things. These are reasonable, logical people, happen to be Christians. I heard about a man who was working on a bush hog and it collapsed on him. And he told God after several hours laying there bleeding that he wanted to die. He was put onto an ambulance and he said that he wanted to die. He told the ambulance driver that he didn't want to live. And then somehow, miraculously, when he got to the hospital, he regained his complete ability to walk and function just as he always had. He's perfectly fine now, even though he was told by the doctor that he would be paralyzed for the rest of his life. Listen, these miracles happen today. And the only reason to look at all of this evidence and conclude that they don't happen is because you don't want to believe in the supernatural. You have already a commitment to naturalism or atheism. Or, number two, you think that a miracle is the least likely thing to occur, like David Hume said. But listen, a miracle being the least likely thing to occur is only the case if God does not exist. If God exists, then miracles are not the least likely thing to occur. After all, we know that the universe began to exist, and something coming from nothing by nothing is already something that we would conclude is the least likely thing to have happened. But it did happen. Why did it happen? Because God exists, and He was the cause of the universe. So if you want to live in a world where you deny these things that seem so obvious to people that believe in God, you can do that. But I would ask you to fairly look at the evidence. And I would say to those who are struggling with difficult times in their lives right now, you know people that are dying because they've dealt with some tragedy like we've seen in Oklahoma. They've experienced some horrible act, like some sort of violence like we saw in the Boston bombings. Maybe you just know someone who's struggling with a terminal illness. They're struggling with cancer, or in their old age, they're beginning to slip off into death. And you feel so alone, and you feel like there is no God, and you feel like there's no way out. Listen. There is good reason today to believe that not only is there a God, but He is here. He wants to help you. He is holding your hand. He still works miracles. Just trust in His Son, Jesus Christ.